Welcome to another Geek Discussion episode of Board Gaming with Education. These episodes are all about talking about a topic. Let's try that again. Ooh.
Talking about a topic?
That's you pretty awesome.
Board Gaming with Education, a podcast for anyone curious about how games and education mix. We explore various topics like game-based learning, gamification, and board games, and the impacts they have on learning. Here's your host, Dustin Statz.
Welcome to Board Gaming with Education. This is a Geek Discussion episode. These episodes are related to board games. The Board Gaming with Education podcast is a podcast that focuses on education and board games. But these specific episodes, the Geek Discussion episodes, we talk about just any topic related to board games. So today's topic is actually related to education too, and we're answering the question, are educational games fun? So each episode starts with our homework. We review homework from last Geek Discussion episode. We go in to define a term or two that is related to board games, and then we cover the topic. So I have here with me Jay and Spencer. I think they want to introduce each other, so I'm going to let them take that away.
That's Jay across the way. He's hip. He runs Cardboard East, reviewing board games, particularly ones from Taiwan. And it's awesome. You should check it out.
Thanks, man. Across from me in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles t-shirt is Spencer. He runs Uchacha, which was Taipei's first Western-style vegetarian restaurant. And they're doing really well. They have two locations now. And in addition to the second location being this great vegetarian restaurant, they have a downstairs area where they play lots of board games, video games, and I'll be watching Game of Thrones next Monday.
So let's jump right into reviewing the homework. I think both of you have some experiences to share. The homework was to talk about or think about an experience you had playing a board game or at a board game event that was a positive experience. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I was playing Roots it was a three-player game. I was playing the Marquis de Cat, which is a pun off of My Kitty Cat. And in the game, you could win one of two ways. You could either win by getting 30 points, or you could win by playing a dominance card. And the dominance cards are you control two corners, or you control three out of the four, like rabbit clearings or fox clearings or mouse clearings. I played the fox one, because I was pretty confident. I had one corner very solidified. One corner was kind of weak, but no one was near me. And the other two corners where my opponents could reach me, each had, I don't know, like eight guys each. So no one is going to stop me.
Eight cats.
Eight dudes on the map. And then, lo and behold, the vagabond character goes into one corner. And then he gives me lots of cards, which helps me. That's his ability. And then we become allies. And then he leads all my cats away from the corner to the other corner, and then leads all of them away to another corner. And his turn ended with his one vagabond character surrounded by, I don't know, 20 cats. It was quite hilarious. I was really shocked. And everyone on the table is laughing. I'm laughing as well, but crying on the inside.
Because he won?
Because he won. Yeah, he won the game because of that. Because I could not come back from that.
You've been betrayed so often in games.
It's part of the enjoyment. I mean, you always have more fun when you win.
Oh, I mean, betrayal is the best part of games. Whether you're being betrayed or getting betrayed. Actually, I'd really like to play Root. My homework. Well, I'm going to reach way back to the beginning of when we played pen and paper.
Before there were boards and dice.
Before there were boards and dice and cards. When we had nothing. Actually, we had the dice. So when I first started learning to play pen and paper games, we started with D&D 3.5. And if anybody's played that before, it is this huge, cumbersome mountain of a pen and paper game to die on. But if you have a very good GM, you tweak the rules and you don't really pay attention to all the crap that can get piled on top of it, plays pretty smoothly. So anyway, we had a very narrative focused game, which by the way is kind of rare for a 3.5. The situation was my character, who is this just kind of woman who could transform into a panther, constantly got herself into trouble because she was like this environmentalist vagabond with no friends. So her companions were her first friends, and they ended up riling up. Well, actually, she burned down a tavern. And she burned it down because there was a dogfighting ring in it and pissed her off. So anyway, there was a whole thing that came. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but yeah, not gonna give too many details, but suffice to say, she would have been impaled on something. So basically, what it did is it introduced this timer to this scenario. And my companions were all in their own cells. And the thing was, we had a couple people who were new to this. They were really enjoying it, but they weren't very good at thinking outside of the box. They wanted to use the tools that they had, which is a problem with a lot of pen and paper games. When people come in, they're like, I have these spells. How can I use these spells to get out of the situation? When you could also, you know, just use your brain. So at one point, one of the characters is looking out the window, and this crow is flapping up against the window, and it's fluttering its wings and clearly trying to get its attention. And what my GM was doing was giving an opportunity to a new player to be really involved and be a key part to them breaking out of the jail cell and then rescuing me, because every 10 minutes he would remind everybody that I am now being lowered onto this spike, basically, and was going to be at least, if not dead, maimed for life. Because we did that in that game. Anyway, this crow's fluttering its wings and clearly, you know, trying to get a key or some sort of message to him. And my friend, who was a wizard in the game, says, okay, what's the crow doing? He's like, well, it's fluttering its wings. It's clearly lifting its leg. He goes, okay, I use burning hands. I blast the crow out the window. We're all like, everyone at the same time went, no! Yeah, anyway, long story short, though, we actually kind of retconned that and explained it to him. But I ended up getting broken out and not killed. But it was a super, super memorable moment in the game.
So he ate crow is what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. We had a lot of luck. I mean, God, that's really got D&D started for us. It was great.
Cool story.
I actually wanted your panther woman to be impaled and...
Oh, she would have been maimed for life, too, because we had our own rules for this. This is actually when Northern Rome was starting to become its own thing. We had variant rules. We had injuries and things. Yeah, she would have been messed up, even if they saved her.
And Northern Realm, for those that don't know about Northern Realm, what's this all about?
Northern Realm is a game that I wrote. It's... started out as just a campaign world and a real variant of 3.5. My idea was to make it deadlier by, you know, taking something like Fireball, 20d6, and making it 40d6. I was going to make it super damage. Didn't really work out. So I spent the next 7 years writing a new game. So now it's a d6-based game, very narrative-focused, and we play it every week.
Awesome. So we have two stories. One with Root and one with Dungeons & Dragons 3.5, right?
Yes.
Was the right addition. I'm kind of new to these additions. So my story, I have three, and it's more like three experiences, and you're both a part of my experience.
I win, though.
So touching.
I win.
So I want to share that Jay does a really good job at teaching games, and I think that takes a bit of selflessness to think about how to teach a game well.
And patience.
Right, and patience.
That I do not have.
And Spencer does an awesome job prepping for our RPG night, for playing Northern Realm, the game he was talking about. And I'm very new to pen and paper, and I'm still kind of like a lot of the time just sitting there listening because I don't know quite how to interact yet. But I'm learning. And then another one where I go over to a friend's house and he always hosts us for games, and it's always nice to get there and he has the game set up ready to go. So those kind of things are awesome parts of the board game community and tabletop community. So those are our three stories. And let's...
But what was your story?
That's my story. It's just three people that are...
Oh.
Awesome. Well, we could tell the story of Dustin's character... almost dying last week. No, week before last. There was this shiny metal thing on the ground. Bunch of mirrors, multifaceted mirrors. So Dustin and another player, they decided to walk up and just touch it.
I was asked to touch it, and I don't say no.
Well, he had verbal consent to touch it before he touched it.
If you learn anything in role-playing games, it's to be cautious.
Don't touch
before things. Don't touch forward. Things, even with verbal consent.
Yeah. Well, one of the other players actually read up on the rules, and apparently I missed something. You guys were very much going to be dead.
Should have died.
All right, moving on.
What does Spencer know?
So let's go into the segment. What does Spencer and maybe possibly Jay know? These are some terms that
I know nothing.
These are some terms that I've picked ahead of time, and I'm going to throw them out there, and we'll talk about them and see if Jay and Spencer know these terms. I think Jay will know both. Spencer might know one of them. Or two. Ooh,
I know something.
So the first one is Kingmaker. So I know Jay knows this one, the Spencer.
But does Spencer know?
Kingmaker is when you're playing checkers and you get a checker piece on the other side of the board.
That's kind of true. I mean, in the game of checkers, that might be a term, but in a general sense.
Is it a term? I was just making that.
I think it's called King Me in checkers, right? King Me.
I mean, that's what I say.
That would be incorrect, Spencer. A kingmaker, a kingmaker means that I think usually you have to have at least a three player game. So one player is left with the decision, and his action will determine who wins the game, even though he won't. So if the three of us are playing a game, I would be in a kingmaker's position if it were my turn, and then on my turn I would decide who would win, Dustin or Spencer.
Yeah, that's nothing like checkers.
And that's frowned upon by a lot of people.
Yeah, it's kind of hard when you're in that position too, because some games, there's no way around it. You just kind of have to make that decision and decide who wins the game between the other two players.
I disagree, because I think spite is a beautiful thing to watch and develop into a game. I really like to play domes or dudes on a map games where there's lots of area control, and there's always a little bit of trash talking in those games, and seeing spite for another player slowly evolve into a kingmaker situation is kind of fun for me.
So you like to watch people suffer? All right.
No, I like to see a different side of people that can come out when they play games. Like I've seen grandmas play cash and guns and then point their guns at their grandchildren, and it's hilarious.
So kingmaker is when someone gets to choose who wins the game, pretty much based on the outcome of an action in the game. All right, so that was the first term, kingmaker. The other term is quarterbacking. Again, I know Jay knows this term.
Quarterbacking is like piggybacking. But you put your hands
in, and then you put your hands out, and then you put your hands in and shake it all about.
I can honestly say I have no idea how to explain this term without sounding dirty.
All right, so we'll flip over to Jay.
Quarterbacking is, I first heard the phrase alpha player, and that's usually when you play a cooperative game, and the quarterback is the player who tells everyone what to do instead of letting them make their own decisions.
Oh, actually, I should have known this term, because this happens in pen and paper as well.
Mm. Yeah, it happens in pen and paper. It happens in Pandemic a lot. It's like, no, you shouldn't do that. You should do this. Well, if you did this, then we could win. Oh, why did you do that? You shouldn't have done that. Now we can't win the game. There are lots of discussions about how you handle that situation. I just prefer not to play games with those people.
That's true. Yeah, they suck.
Yeah,
if you're a quarterback, you are the worst.
I am a quarterback.
You're a quarterback?
Well,
you are like the nicest guy in the
world. No, I don't think so. No, I've never played a game with you when you're a quarterback.
Yeah, because, Pandemic, I've played that game a lot, and I don't like to play with newer people because I catch myself explaining and giving away too many strategies and tips that I'd rather them figure out. So I try to not play, and I say that I will be happy to, put out the cards and do the cubes and do the
to be fair, I don't think I've ever played Pandemic where it wasn't a fully, like, there was a lot of discussion on turns, especially when there wasn't, it was heating up and there was a lot of, you know, not epidemics, but when there are three cubes on a lot of places. I mean, I don't think we've ever sat there and hoped somebody figured it out. We all discussed what to do.
Yeah, it's just the idea that one person dominates the discussion.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying with pandemic, though, is it's, I don't know, there's usually more than one quarterback,
yeah,
if there is one.
But I guess whenever I play it, it's usually with people who are not either familiar with games, because I feel like it's a good gateway game, and I know the game too well, so I catch myself quarterbacking when
I think
I play.
You're just being hard on yourself.
Maybe. But that is quarterbacking, so someone who takes control of the game, like the quarterback of a football team, or we can also call it alpha gamer.
Or a double agent quarterback, like in Risk, where you pretend you're being the quarterback. That's really nice, telling people what to do, but really you're just trying to win.
Do you have any other friends besides us?
I think Spencer invented a new gaming term. Double agent quarterback. All right. So let's get into the topic, and we are answering the question, are educational games fun? So I'm going to go to Jay or Spencer first. Your first thoughts on this topic, what comes to mind?
Well, I learned quite a bit from a game. It was the Cold War. And I've never talked about it before, but I learned quite a bit about it. Cuban Missile Crisis, Space Race.
For anyone just tuning in, Spencer loves the game called Twilight Struggle.
Oh, I was going to ask if the game happened in the morning, afternoon, evening. Oh, it's a Twilight Struggle. But was it fun learning about the Cold War through the game?
Oh, yeah, it's really fun.
But I guess, is Twilight Struggle specifically an educational game?
No, actually, you're going to have to explain to me what exactly that means. What do you consider an educational game? I mean, you're always learning.
Well, that's a good question. I think the interesting thing is that Twilight Struggle is a historical game, and there are a lot of war games, and you could debate whether or not Twilight Struggle is a war game or not, but we're not going to debate that now. There are a lot of war games that are historical, and there's lots of flavor text, there's lots of information. Designers nowadays tend to try and keep it as accurate as possible. So as you play the game, you do learn about that through the game, through the cards that you get, through the plays that you do. Sometimes even in the rulebook themselves, they have like little essays that you could read about. Like, this is actually what happened. This is the strategy that the real person used in the game. And you could try that strategy if you want, or you could try something else.
Mm. We're definitely living in an era where, as you were saying earlier, Dustin, that the teachers now of this generation grew up playing games, so they've been able to incorporate it into teaching kids. And actually, it got me thinking. I know quite a few people that have created games or modified games to teach to their kids in class. I had a friend who modified Risk for ancient civilizations, the fall of Rome, and had the Huns coming in and the Goths coming in and invading. And basically, it was Risk with some breaks for talking about what was happening with a GM, because basically he sat there and was introducing things like plagues and invasions and uprising in places, and the players had to deal with it in certain ways. So it's we live in a great time for games.
Yeah, I would say that growing up, a lot of educational games were kind of boring. And they definitely can be, just like any other game, can be boring. But, you know, gamers, especially around my age, who grew up with, I guess, the age of video games, and knew how to keep kids' attentions really, really well. And they kind of science it out to where games can be fun and educational at the same time. I think design has just gotten a lot better through the years.
And more thoughtful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think to go back to your question of what is an educational game, what you're explaining is like Risk. That is more a game designed for fun that teachers have learned strategies to adapt them to be educational. And I guess Jay's game was adding educational elements onto a game, right? So then if we go to what is an educational game, would be a game designed for the purpose of learning something instead of entertainment.
Right. Though nowadays it's become almost one and the same. You're supposed to enjoy it. It's part of the learning experience. I mean, when I think back as a kid, people's idea of adding education to something kids would enjoy, it was like math raps. Do you guys remember that? Or there was music that would incorporate multiplication and division and addition, and you were supposed to enjoy listening to that as a kid, and you'd learn how to multiply 1 through
12. Every generation had that. I mean, like in the 70s, they had
Schoolhouse of Rock,
right?
Yeah, though I would argue Schoolhouse of Rock was a lot better than math raps.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know these math raps you speak
Racist
of.
They were pretty popular.
When white people try to rap in the early 90s. Sorry.
They had rock and roll ones and country ones, too. I mean, the whole idea behind how games can be, or even just adding fun. I would zoom all the way out and just say adding fun to education. The whole idea behind that has changed. It's evolved into... yes, you can have fun while you learn.
Well, I think the main thing is that early educational game designs were mostly just trivia games. Mm. Like, here's a trivia question. Do you know the answer? Well, now here's the answer, or here's
a
book that you get, and then you can look it up, the answer yourself, and then answer the question. So something like Carmen Sandiego is a great example of that. Yeah. It was just a series of trivia questions. And even Trivial Pursuit is just lots of trivia questions. And then slowly, I think games have evolved to try something different. So they kind of walk away from there.
Well, and part of that evolution, again, I'm going back to math, but do you remember Math Blasters?
Yes. It was on the Mac or old Mac, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
It basically, what it would do is it gave you a bunch of math to do. It's not fun. But then there were breaks in the game where you got to shoot stuff or you got to move around. And games have really very much been able to incorporate that better. It wasn't like, now here's a break time and have fun. Now it's the whole thing is fun.
I hope you are enjoying our conversation about educational games. If you want to support our show and you're enjoying this conversation, the number one way you can support our show that is free to you is just to share this episode with someone you think that might enjoy it. Also, we do have a Patreon page. You can find that at boardgamingwitheducation.com/support. We just added a $10 pledge level with a mug. So if you sign up for our Patreon and you support our show for $10 a month, we will send you a mug for the first month. You can also support the show by just pledging any amount. Any amount helps us fund the show. Let's get back to the conversation. Right, I think going on and connecting with the evolution, a lot of us are familiar with Jeopardy, the review game Jeopardy, and I genuinely enjoyed it in high school, but I would say that I didn't necessarily learn playing it. A lot of times it was a review game, but I feel like it didn't help me to prepare for my exam. But going along with that, they have different games because in a Jeopardy game, one person's answering the question, the other team doesn't really have any reason to be engaged in that question or answering that question. But now they have different PowerPoint games called Bomb Games. Are you guys familiar with these?
No.
No, please continue.
So Bomb Game is something that you can find online. A lot of teachers created different themes, but essentially comes from a game that someone designed, I don't know exactly where. I've first read about it in ESL, where they put a bunch of flashcards on the board, and you come up, you answer a question, you flip over a card, you either get points or a bomb. Now, this game's not very great because it has the same problems as Jeopardy, where one team's answering a question, there's no reason for the other team to get involved. Also, if you get a bomb, your team score goes all the way down to 0. Now, how the heck do you catch up?
Yeah, that's kind of brutally random there.
Yeah, so the
bad game design.
So the theme games now, like there's one with Mario, Bomberman, the Avengers. So there's different interactions between the players. Like one game, there's a Star Wars theme one, and you have to like use the Force and try to do rock, paper, scissors with another team to be able to steal some points. So every team's engaged because they want to see what that team is going to get to answer that question. Also, there's opportunities to steal points and steal questions too. But yeah, I think it goes along with the idea that instructional design within games are improving.
Yeah, but even then, that's still the idea of a trivia-based education system. I ask a question, do you know the answer? And sometimes those are good and sometimes they're bad.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of lately, I think one of the fields that have done the best and very clearest version of educational games is in the medical field, because you have to memorize a lot of diseases and bacterial infections and vaccines and organs, you name it. And they've got a lot of card games based around that. I'm trying to remember, actually, there was one where you try to be the last person standing. You have, you know, white blood cells to protect you and stuff. And it's more on the basic level, not like doctor level, though they have those as well. But you're basically trying to kill the other player with diseases and take out their organs and stuff. But you learn quite a bit about the human body.
Fascinating. Yeah, there's a lot of advancement in mnemonic learning, usually especially with flashcards. And I'm sure all of us here living in Taiwan have all tried to learn Chinese at one point. And like flashcard programs now will know, like, you couldn't answer this, so I'm going to recycle this at a higher frequency than the ones you do know. And the ones you do know really well, I'll decrease to a lower frequency. So we've kind of programmed our learning through that. But again, it's still question, answer, question, answer. Going back to what you said earlier, Dustin, the problem that I have with a lot of educational games and teachers is that a lot of teachers, in my opinion, misunderstand fun and educational. Because in my opinion, it's really easy to make kids have fun or make students have fun in the classroom, but it's difficult to make them have fun and learn at the same time.
I think it goes into like fun versus engagement as well. I think if a student's engaged, there's a higher opportunity to learn.
Yes.
But if they are having fun, that doesn't necessarily mean they're engaged
in
the lesson.
It also really depends on what you're teaching. I mean, there are certain things that are really hard to incorporate. How are you going to incorporate a fun game into algebra?
Actually,
you can.
There's a lot of better instruction for teaching math today. Just thinking about the time when I was in LA and as a TA, the math teacher did some really cool stuff with math. And there's a lot of escape room activities even with math too.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of teaching reasoning, but I mean, are you spending 90% of your time playing a game based around algebra, or are you learning how to manipulate numbers by solving problems?
Right. That's what the escape room, I guess. I've never used it, but I've seen it online that you're solving math problems to escape, quote unquote,
well,
the room,
you know,
through different puzzles.
I had a friend, the same one who GM'd my impaling scenario, incorporated a really stripped down version of D&D and did like an escape room kind of thing, but it was in the theater of the mind and incorporated reasoned scenarios. And I think he was doing math or science. It might have been science, or you had to come up with different like chemical compositions to escape.
So are there any educational games that either of you have played that you think actually did a good job of engagement, brought fun, and was educational?
That's why I'm trying to remember that organ game, because it was. I learned a little bit.
Organ Trail?
Of what each... No, no, no. Not
oh, the organ.
Organ, organ. Organs like inside your body.
Okay. Organ Trail. Just yeah. Take your organs out and put them in a trail leading out of the forest.
Viruses and what the roles that your organs do. And again, it's a very basic level game. You're just learning... God, why can't I think of this subject? What's the subject of learning your human body?
Anatomy.
Wow. God, I've lived here too
obviously
long.
You didn't learn anatomy through that game.
It's been 11 years in a Chinese-speaking country. I do not remember anything anymore.
I think D&D is still the best solution that stays away from question-answer style of design and keeps engagement and is fun. I had to teach some kids about frontier vocabulary, you know, like Western expansion. So I decided to make it into a D&D experience. And I brought in all the words that they had to use, and they had to use the words, they had to speak them, use them repeatedly. And they were eventually, by the end, able to retain that information. And they created stories using these new words, using these new grammars, using these tools that they learned. and therefore were able to remember it. I think you're able to remember the story more, and then they were able to pick apart pieces of the story that use the new words and grammar terms.
Yeah, you know, actually, when I think about it, what I can remember almost every session of pen and paper I've ever done, not in super details, not necessarily remembering every single character's name. And obviously, in real life, you don't remember everyone's name. But it is a great way of getting people to remember because they're more engaged. And I always explain to people who, because we are now at a time where D&D isn't specific. It's still nerdy, but it isn't one of those things like, you got beat up in class, nerdy kind of thing. Everyone, especially once you reach your 30s, first of all, you don't give a rat's
tail.
You don't care what anybody thinks anymore, and you've heard about D&D all your life, so you're curious about it. So people ask, generally speaking, I'd say a mass majority of the population would be willing to try it. They won't necessarily enjoy it, but they try it. But the beauty about doing any sort of D&D is everyone can enjoy it. It's just getting the right people, telling the right story. And you can tell any story, which makes it a perfect educational tool. Because, I mean, it could be teaching the Oregon Trail. You're just out, you know, on the plains.
Teaching the Oregon Trail.
You know, you've got dysentery. Make a strength check or a fortitude check.
I think,
Oregon Trail. It's not Oregon Trail.
Oregon.
It's not a trail
Oregon.
Of organs. I'm sorry. I'm just imagining Spencer like disemboweling his players and just slowly dragging their entrails throughout the forest.
Dysentery would work in that as well.
I want to comment on what both of you guys said. I think Jay and I have a unique advantage as language teachers because any game we do, especially board games or the RPG games, there's a certain level of input and output where as a language learner, you're learning through no matter any interaction you have in the game, you're learning vocabulary, you're learning how to speak, you're improving your listening skills. You're memorizing, like with the flashcards, you have to reuse the terms, reuse the mechanics. You also receive feedback from the game too. And then with the RPG game, we've been using an RPG game or this past quarter in Grace's class. And she said that her students' listening skills went up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if we can say, there's the old saying, causation doesn't imply correlation, where it doesn't necessarily mean...
At least the other way around.
No,
correlation doesn't...
We're going to go ahead and say causation. because it fits our purpose.
But I think you're right. I think also with RPG games, it might be a little bit more challenging for like math teachers to use it in the classroom. But with the gamification system I'm working on, I think a lot of times, even just devoting 15 minutes a week to doing something like this helps develop the classroom culture at the very minimum.
Yeah, and the beauty is if you have a kid who's really annoying, you could just kill them every single day in a D&D session.
This is why Spencer doesn't teach.
You're annoying, Robbie. I'm going to drop a whale on you.
Robbie, you fell into a pit. When do I hit the ground? You don't. It's a bottomless pit. You just keep on falling. We're going to continue our adventure without you.
We can't hear you anymore. You're too far down.
I'll throw you a sandwich. Maybe it'll catch up.
And then actually throw a sandwich at him.
So I want to talk about the question or the idea that Jay keeps raising is, are there any games that are not flashcard based that are educational? I know Spencer mentioned the Oregon Attack.
Oregon Attack. I mean, it's a card game, but it's like I guess it's not like Sushi Go where it's a, what kind of game is that called? Where you pass
card drafting.
Card drafting. It's not card. Well, what's the strict definition for card drafting?
You take a card, you pass your hand, and then
yeah, well, it's
else.
Not card drafting. It's or a card it game, but Don't it's not
own,
a flash
you
card.
You own
game.
A magic cube. How do you not know what drafting is?
I just didn't know if it was if the definition was more broad.
So there is a company.
I love you so much. No, you can't really see this, but I'm just going to let everyone know that Spencer is a master of gesticulation. His hands move in such a way, so elegantly.
So elegant. Oh, I like that.
So there is a company that makes board games, and they make a game called Cytosis, that the players control a cell and they try, it's very similar to your organ attack where they try to make the most white blood cells in the cell. They have a couple others, all science-based, like subatomic and ion. So some different biology or...
I would think science would actually be an easier one to do because by nature, you have a lot of interactions there. So if you have interactions built into the actual concept, you can build a game around it. Whereas something like history, it's kind of hard not to build in some sort of trivia aspect or need to have a guiding hand.
Are you saying that history isn't filled with interactions?
I mean, it obviously is. But if you're trying to teach a history, you can't make it open world unless you're a grunt.
Well, neither of those games are open world either. I mean, they're all board games. Cytosis takes place in one cell, if I'm correct.
Right, but I mean, the interactions are set. I mean, like, you can't run in a Civil War and be like, well, I ran out and shot Grant.
I really like their games, I just want to say. I've only played a few of them. I played at Cytosis, and even though it really wasn't my kind of game, I really did learn a lot through playing that game. And it made me respect that company tremendously because they did teach these concepts without having the need of going through a question-answer-based system.
All right, so I think we kind of explored the topic, are educational games fun? And we came to the conclusion that it depends.
I think it's just like anything else. They can be fun, and yeah, they can be painfully boring. And for me, it's escaping that design space of question, answer, question, answer, question, answer.
Yeah, I land on it's getting better and better. I mean, it's not there yet with everything, but... it'll get there.
I think for me, I again go back to being a language teacher, and it's really easy to start with a game with the main objective of this game is to learn a language objective. Like I've designed negotiation games where students are using different grammar structures and vocabulary to negotiate with their companies. They're working on their presentation skills where they need to present their company's objective at the end of the game. So for me, it's more in reverse. I don't usually find an educational game first and use it in my classroom. It's more, what can I take from these games to use in class? All right, so we have some homework for the end of our episode.
Okay.
What is that?
Go home and create an educational game.
And send it to Board Gaming with Education.
And send it to us so we can pitch it and make millions of dollars.
Yeah, so if you are a teacher, I think you can try to think about an educational game and think about how you can maybe adapt it to be more engaging or a bit more strategic or add another element of a game mechanic to the game so your students are a bit more engaged than just a question and answer like flashcards. If you're not a teacher and you're listening in, let us know about an educational game you found that was fun and engaging and you learned something from.
Like math raps.
So, Jay and Spencer, before we say goodbye, can you let the listeners know where they can find you?
You can find me at Utacha near our technology building. I'm there every night. Games are available for everyone. We have tons of them now. And say hi. I'll play with you.
You promise?
I promise.
You can find me online. I'm at cardboardeast.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can contact me through there. And again, I'm Jay, and thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you for listening in this week. If you like what you heard, be sure to let us know. You can find us on social media as Board Gaming with Education or BGE Games, or email us at podcast@boardgamingwitheducation.com. If you want to support our podcast, be sure to check out our support page on our website. As always, teach better, learn more, and most importantly, play more. Thank you for listening, and until next time.